keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You have just tuned into Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. For the next hour, your host, Dr. Tom Rogers, and Jim Velas will expose the business diseases that bleed your profits and rupture the quality of your life. Now welcome your hosts.
Hello, I'm Dr. Tom Rogers.
And I'm Jim Velas, and together we head up the Rogers Group. Today we will be interviewing Chuck Krugel, an employment attorney and human resource consultant.
The name of our show is Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. Now, last week's show, we had Chuck Smith, who is president of New Office, a firm that provides innovative solutions to companies looking to hire. Now, in particular, Chuck described some very interesting internet-based technology and that's designed to enhance the company's online application and pre-screening capabilities so that with the mere click of a button, the company can immediately identify desirable candidates for a position. Chuck also gave some interviewing tips for the interviewer, urging interviewers to talk less and listen more while carefully watching a candidate's body language. And Chuck, when asked about tips for someone being interviewed, suggested they do their homework about the company and surprise the interviewer by having questions ready to ask the interviewer. Now, Jim, did we get any emails last week?
Yes, actually we did. And the most interesting one was, how do you guarantee hiring the perfect candidate? And so that became an interesting one. Well, the answer to that question is very simple. You cannot 100% guarantee getting the right person every time. However, if you follow a process, you can certainly increase the probability of getting the best person each time you interview. And the process goes like, in a little bit of recap from last week's session was, the first thing you have to do is to sit down and define the job requirements and what's expected and in terms of accountability and actions that are necessary to make it the perfect job. The second thing you have to do is then make a listing of the characteristics, quality, and background of the people who can accomplish that job. The next thing to do is to write an advertisement that encompasses the characteristics, quality, and background and tells the prospective employers or employees what to put on their resume to direct their answers towards what you're asking for. After you receive that, you go through a selection process, maybe by yourself or with a group of people, selecting the 5 or 10 or 15 best candidates, and then you go through an interview process. After the interview process, which is really the first time is a screening process, and then you follow that and you select again the best 2 or 3 candidates out of that group, and you take them through a battery of assessments, generally done by a professional, much like the Rogers Group might offer. Then after you go through the assessments and find out these people really do possess the right characteristics, traits, and values that most match your job requirements and your business, then you go through another re-interviewing process, this time with multiple interviewers. After you completed that, the multiple interviewers would then sit down and discuss the pros and cons of each candidate. And then, of course, you select the best candidate and make an offer. Again, you can never guarantee 100% success, but if you're going to have a healthy organization, it's imperative that you get healthy, profitable employees on board the first time and every time.
That's right. It is imperative. And when you do the right things, when you hit the process in place, you're going to dramatically improve your batting average, which is critical. Isn't it so much easier and better to hire the right person the first time? And better than whatever your batting average is now, but you know, whether it's 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4, you can dramatically, exponentially increase your batting average. And so it's so worth it to do it, to have the right kind of hiring process. And, of course, here at the Rogers Group, we are, in conjunction with the show, we are constantly talking about different kinds of diseases that happen in organizations, because we are all about creating and maintaining healthy organizations and eliminating disease. We've talked about everything from disease sales processes, disease marketing, diseases in family-run business, all those diseases in hiring. And today we're going to be talking about our topic is, are diseased employment processes costing you money? And, of course, we're excited to talk with Chuck Krugel. Now, as we said before, Chuck's not only an employment attorney, human resources consultant. He's also the director of legal and compliance services for the Human Resources Store. But before we put Chuck on the air, let's put the conversation into perspective here. And folks, just think about all of the cradle-to-grave costs involved in hiring, training and developing, paying wages, providing benefits, and then going through the entire cycle again when someone quits or is fired. And we're not just talking about the, you know, the enormous financial burden a company takes by adding someone to the payroll, but also the time it takes to do everything involved with hiring, developing people, paying personnel, paying office staff, getting insurance records and make sure everything is right with the insurance companies. Not only are these costs and time factors exorbitant, but when you make a hiring mistake, everything is just compounded exponentially. If, for example, the fired employee or not hired job applicant were to file a lawsuit claiming some sort of discrimination or something like that, it just becomes a mind boggle and just makes you wonder why you have anybody working for you in the first place. And another thing, countless small to medium-sized businesses, they're really struggling with paying out unemployment insurance, often long after the fired worker has been hired by somebody else. So to help us make some sense out of all this, we now bring in Chuck Krugel. And Chuck, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Dr. Tom. How about yourself and also Jim?
Hey. Oh, we're doing fantastic. Thank you. Chuck, can you just tell us a little about yourself and your background?
Sure. Got 11 years of experience in labor and employment law, both on management and union side, so I spent a little bit of time representing a labor union in Chicago. Also, five and a half years now on my own, in my own management side practice. In addition to the law degree, I have a Master of Arts in Industrial Organizational Psychology, so I have a background in HR, labor relations, industrial relations type stuff. And what else? Been a published author in the field and now an interviewed attorney on the radio. And hopefully this will be one of those interviews where I do more talking and less listening.
Yes, well, we want you to chat, talk. Don't you have a blog spot too?
Oh yeah. My website is http://charlesakrugel.blogspot.com, and there I have basically essays and pretty much almost 100% original content of my perspective on human resources, labor and employment law, management, labor relations, that kind of stuff. And also photos of people at work. So there's a lot of websites have sort of generic photos of people shaking hands and people in these fake meetings. Mine are actual real photos. So.
All right. Now, Chuck, you also have, besides all that, you've worked on both sides of the legal employment, labor, and with employers. Can you just talk about that for a bit?
Sure, representing United Airlines pilots in Chicago with the Airline Pilots Association, and that was through June or July of 2000, just before 9/11. But that was during the beginning of the demise for United. So it was an interesting time, very interesting dynamic, especially with an employee-owned company. Actually, at that time, I believe it was the largest employee-owned company in the world. So,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Chuck, when we put out our flyer, our e-cards, and that we'd be talking to you today. We received an inordinate amount of emails, and you know the most often asked question was, are you ready for this?
Sure.
What can you tell a prospective employer about a former employee of yours?
Yeah, that's always a difficult one for employers. Basically, I would restrict it to, or I advise clients to restrict it to, confirm whether or not the person worked for you. So, yeah, they worked for us. Confirm their job titles, the positions held, and confirm dates of employment. Don't get into money. Don't get into performance or behavior. I mean, legally, you can get into performance, and you can be protected. There's a lot of state laws which protect employers from giving out negative information about performance as long as they give that information out with a good faith belief that's true, but I still wouldn't do it just to avoid problems. You never know what the prospective employer will say if they don't hire that employee to cover their own butt. Just to avoid problems, I would just stick with basics such as confirm whether they work for you, dates of employment, positions held.
Well, if you're the prospective employer, how are you able to check the background of the people that you're attempting to interview and hire?
Well, there is one other wrinkle to this. If the employee was good, there's nothing wrong with saying that they were good and good performer, good behavior. But if nothing is said, if the former employer is silent to the prospective employer, that could be a pretty good indicator that they weren't such a great employee.
Right.
So always, you know, give good information is always a good indicator that something, that there's good things about that prospective employee.
Right.
No information is an indicator of maybe that they weren't so good.
Yes. Okay. That's right. That makes good sense. Now, but Chuck, we are ready for a break already.
Oh, wow.
So, folks, we'll be right back after a short break. We're talking with Chuck Krugel here, and this is Dr. Tom Rogers, along with my colleague Jim Velez, for Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
All rise. This honorable court is now in session.
Please be seated. The defendant shall remain standing. The defendant is before this court today for sentencing, having been previously found guilty of a gun crime by a jury of his peers. Given the severity of this crime, it is the order of this court that the defendant be sentenced to a term of 5 years imprisonment. Defendant will be remanded to custody immediately.
On June 4th, my big brother was sentenced to 5 years in prison for a gun crime. That day, he sentenced me to 5 years of walking home alone from school.
When you commit a gun crime, your family pays the price. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Tune in to Real Estate Coast to Coast with Mark Nash, a weekly residential real estate magazine. Timely interviews with real estate journalists, money magazines, top 100 real estate market focus, interior designers, home improvement experts, celebrity interviews, and your real estate questions answered by experienced broker and author Mark Nash. Real Estate Coast to Coast with Mark Nash, every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Business. More and more business people recognize the importance of spirituality in their work. How do busy professionals discover what rings true for them? Embracing the Journey with Karen Humphrey Salad explores what it means to be spiritually fulfilled in business and how to integrate spiritual direction into a career. Expert guests, authors, and inspiring speakers join Karen every week to discuss such issues as honesty, compassion, generosity, ethics, and integrity in the workplace. Take a positive step forward to greater life balance. Tune into Embracing the Journey with Karen Humphrey Salick, broadcasting every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel, the bottom line in business talk.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
We are back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 1-866-233-7861. Now back to your host, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velez.
Oh, this is Dr. Tom Rogers with the Rogers Group, along with my colleague.
I'm Jim Velez, and here we're interviewing Charles Krugel, an employment attorney and human resource consultant. And before the break, Chuck was telling us about what you can and cannot say when prospective employees are being called for a reference at your company. And Chuck basically said, be careful. Would that be a good analysis?
Yeah, be very careful.
Yeah. You know, Chuck, and the second most often questions that we got asked came from middle-sized companies and their concern about unions.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's your advice for companies where employees are considering joining a union?
Well, again, be very careful in terms of what you say to those employees, how you try to, if you're going to combat a union organization effort, be very careful in what you say and how you organize your efforts. The National Labor Relations Act and other state or local labor relations act are pretty explicit in terms of what's prohibited conduct. for employers. So, you know, in terms of hiring professionals such as professional union busters or union prevention people, be very careful and how you deliberate with them and develop a strategy, because there have been pretty hefty fines paid by both companies and sometimes even the attorneys representing them relative to union avoidance efforts. So,
well, Chuck, when do you think a company ought to develop this strategy? At some time in their onset or after they see some union activity beginning?
Well, generally the onset is you start hearing rumors or you start seeing people with, you know, maybe union jackets, hats, buttons, people talking about an association, a workers' association, something along those lines. And employers, and I always advise this, it doesn't matter if you're union or non-union, keep your ear close to the ground, listen to what's going on, pay attention to rumors and innuendo. You don't have to contribute to them, but pay attention and be careful in how you handle or process that information. Be very cognizant of it.
When Tom and I do strategic planning with non-union companies, we always bring up this model and says, what happens if? And generally when we bring that up, the owners or the executives of the company look at us and say, gee, that's never going to happen to me. And it gives us the indication that they've done no strategic planning around this event occurring. And so then when it does occur, they're almost in a panic mode to figure out what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when do you like to get into a company and talk to them about actually planning out their strategies?
When they contact me, when they first start dealing with me as an attorney and a consultant, in terms of talking about their labor and employment issues. So even if an employer doesn't have a union, I'm always asking them, you know, have you heard anything? Are there people talking about associations, things like that? I always want to know what's going on. I want to find out, and I want to know how much management knows, because I want to know if there's a disconnect between management and their employees, because oftentimes that's how these problems arise, or that's how they get so far, you know, that's how they proceed so far from, you know, from going from A to Z. You know, the last thing you want to do is start out at L and trying to determine your strategy. You want to start at A. Or another way to analogize it, it's like a chess game. And you want to play the whole board and think five, six, seven moves ahead.
Well, Chuck, what is it, you know, in terms of the companies, when they know their employees are considering joining unions, you said they have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that they explicitly could not do?
Yeah, they can't prevent them from organizing. They have to basically, it's a democratic process, and they have to allow them to have their say. They have to allow them to be able to meet, not on company time, obviously, but they have to be able to allow, they can't prohibit them from meeting with union representatives or other union members after work or before work or during lunchtime, you know, off premises, that kind of stuff. They have to allow them the opportunity to meet, to hold elections, organize, to basically run through this democratically mandated process, that's implemented via federal or state local law.
I mean, if they want to go hardball the companies, can they fire certain employees? What, rabble rousers?
Not for union activity, organizing activity. But that doesn't mean that the employees have the right to automatically say something like, you know, it's First Amendment or this is protected concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. So theft, you know, or if they're otherwise belligerent or insubordinate. No, they're not protected just because they're talking about union activity or some sort of concerted activity.
Right, so if you have other reasons to fire them.
Or take disciplinary action, yeah.
Or take some kind of disciplinary action, you know, you can do that.
Now, let me just add this caveat. You're going to look pretty silly as an employer if all of a sudden you start getting wind of union activity and you start implementing your progressive discipline policy, which you haven't been following for the last 2 years anyway, or which you haven't been following religiously anyway. So all of a sudden you start getting wind of this, and it's like, okay, now we got to start following this. We have to start implementing this exactly as it's written in the policy, and now we're going to start with Bob, who's talking about organizing with the Teamsters.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Chuck. When I bought my manufacturing company, it was already unionized,
mm-hmm.
And I actually found that to be a benefit to me because now I had a legitimate contract between me and each employee. And it was very easy for me just to follow a process that was already pre-agreed upon. And I think it worked out to my benefit.
Some companies voluntarily unionize. They have check-off agreements, things like that, knowing that if they basically allow the union to come in and not be combative with them, it makes it easier to basically work with them in implement or in designing an agreement or negotiating an agreement and then implementing it. So
now, you know, go ahead.
Huh? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, Chuck, let me ask you. Once the union is in there, can you get rid of a union once they're officially in there? You know, legally, is there a way to do that?
Sure. Either through what's called RD, a decertification petition, or an RM, an employer petition. Decertification petitions are brought by employees or other employee groups. The employer petition is brought by the employer, and these are under National Labor Relations Act or other state and local labor relations laws. But statistically speaking, only about a third of these RM or RD petitions are successful. So two-thirds of them aren't successful.
So the employer would, you know, where would he present this petition? To a government agency?
To a regulatory agency, National Labor Relations Board, or like in Illinois, maybe the Local Labor Relations Board, Educational Labor Relations Board, whichever Labor Relations Act applies, and whichever board administrates that act.
Right. What would be the kind of things on the one-third that have been successful by employers? Is there any commonality in terms of what got rid of the union? What this board decided, for example?
No, I'm not really aware of any sort of commonalities, although basically what you're talking about is loss of majority status, where basically majority of union members basically lose faith or confidence in the union and want it out. They don't want it anymore. There are strategies where also employers can diminish the impact of the union through some strategies such as combining various locals or union groups, employee groups within the workplace, that's called accretion, or through sale and then, you know, diminishing the impact of the union, or creating a multi-employer unit agreements. So, for example, if you have like a 50-store chain in retail, whichever industry, and you have one union, and if all of a sudden you decide, well, I want 50 unions or I want 50 separate agreements, you could diminish the impact or power that the unions now have. Like just basically instead of, you know, 100,000 unionized employees all under one union, you could have 50 different unions of maybe, a few thousand employees each.
Yeah, a lot of work, but, you know, it does minimize their influence.
Yeah.
Now, what about during a strike? What kind of right do employers have to just say, well, you're on strike, you can't come back? And we're hiring new people, kind of like what Reagan did with the air traffic controllers back in the beginning of the 80s.
Yeah, they have, employers have a lot of authority to do that now, to do a lockout.
That's across states or just like in the state of Illinois, for example?
I'm sorry, you said?
That's a federal law, they can do that across states?
Well, I believe for federal employees, other state laws may have different laws and regulations relating to the hiring of replacements, depending on, you know, for like emergency services, things like that, police, fire.
But for private companies that we're talking about.
Okay, for private companies, yeah. They have federally the right to hire replacements.
They do. I mean, permanent replacements.
Well, you're also talking then depends on what the agreement, if the collective bargaining agreement is silent on that, then it could. But if there's provisions within the collective bargaining agreement for permanent replacements, you know, the duration of replacements, things like that, that could mitigate the ability to hire permanent replacements.
So I guess your recommendation is talk to a lawyer before you make the next step.
Exactly.
Well, let's get off the unions there for a little bit. Let's go back just to companies, whether they're union or non-union. How do companies suffer because of bad personnel decisions?
Well, you're talking about loss of money. You know, basically, you're looking at unemployment comp or workers' comp. You're looking at higher turnover. You're looking at lost manpower in terms of dealing with the decision you made and dealing with loss of morale and all that. All that will translate into money lost.
If I were to be sued by an employee, mm-hmm. what kind of legal expenses might I be looking at?
You're looking at potentially thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars in order to, you know, if you're talking about all the way through to litigation. Now, generally speaking, you could be before regulatory agencies such as the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or state human rights agency, which will have their own fact-finding and investigation process and potentially have their own resolution or mediation, conciliation process, and that could be less money than litigation, but you're still talking a pretty good chunk of change in order to resolve that issue or to handle process it.
Now, if the employee loses the litigation, Mm-hmm. Can the company go back after that employee for the cost of the actual litigation?
Yeah, there are provisions for the collection of attorney's fees and costs, depending on the nature of the complaint, whether it was brought in good faith or not. If it was brought in good faith and it was legitimate, probably not. But if it was a frivolous complaint and it's obvious that the employee was lying and just looking to get money, it's possible that you could collect attorney's fees, reasonable attorney's fees and expenses.
So what are the worst things companies could do to invite a lawsuit?
I would say it's bad communication on management's part, and that's whether or not, it doesn't matter if you're unionized or non-unionized. Basically, if you're not, I kind of go along the lines of transparency. I think if management is transparent, they're going to be better off. They're going to do a lot better job avoiding complaints, disputes, lawsuits, all those types of issues. If they can logically explain why they're making decisions or in good faith explain to their employees what they're doing, why they're doing it, how the business is being run, that's fine. You know, that's going to help them a lot. If employees think that they're blind or they're being blinded by management as to what's going on, they don't know, they feel insecure, that's going to create a lot of problems.
Well, you know what time it is, Chuck?
Time for a break?
Time for another break.
All right.
And this is Jim Velas along with Chuck Kugler and my cohort, Dr. Tom Rogers. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back momentarily.
All right, your 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Put your bat on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Silly head.
Okay, that's right, your thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but yeah, put it in on you.
But Daddy.
Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy?
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy, run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have straight-armed them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Navigating the sea of options, selections, and considerations when it comes to managing finances is not easy to do alone. Between Social Security reform, rising healthcare costs, debt management, and college planning, it can seem insurmountable. On Financial Planning Perspectives, David Yeske clears the fog of confusion and provides guidance through these important choices. Based on his personal experience and with experienced and knowledgeable guests, Financial Planning Perspectives, broadcasting every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, bestows the financial direction to make informed choices.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker, The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Many people who own stocks and mutual funds do not have a plan to manage their positions. Buy and hold no longer works. On the Dollar Doctor Show, broadcasting Tuesdays at noon Pacific on Voice America Business, hosts Willard Saperstein and Peter Greco talk stocks and mutual funds, as well as addressing general investment questions. They apply their years of experience in a supply-demand approach to provide analysis of individual stocks and mutual funds. Informative and entertaining, tune in for expert guidance on the Dollar Doctor Show, every Tuesday at noon Pacific.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
We are back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 1-866-233-7861. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas.
Yes, this is Dr. Tom Rogers along with Jim Velas here at the Rogers Group. We've been interviewing Chuck Krugel here, an employment labor attorney. And Chuck has been giving us a lot of tidbits on things that companies can, should, or shouldn't do in order to keep lawsuits away and keep unions away. Chuck, you were in the midst of answering the last question we had, and then we had the break came up. What are the worst things companies can do to invite a lawsuit? Did, you mentioned being transparent.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, you're being transparent to your employees. You're allowing them to have a say in their work. You're allowing them to vent about things that maybe they don't understand or things they're frustrated about. There is a process for that, or a policy, regulations, or rules in the workplace regarding venting. I mean, obviously, inappropriate venting is coming to work with a gun and, you know, threatening people. Appropriate venting would be getting upset and trying, you know, saying to your boss, I don't get what, you know, what's going on here, what the hell is happening here. Also, employers don't want to take any action on the basis against any employees on the basis, or prospective employees, that is, too, on the basis of any protected classes, such as race, sex, national origin, age, disability, military status, etc. So you don't want to take any personnel actions on the basis of any of those issues, and you don't want to appear to be taking any action based on those classes either.
Well, Chuck, you're talking about venting here. Now, it would just seem to me that wouldn't one of the keys be to whatever personnel discipline policy or grievance policy, whatever you want to call it, venting policy, is that things have to be on paper. Someone has to write down what occurred, otherwise it's a he said versus he she said. Wouldn't it be that the case?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, what you want to try to do is you don't want to create too much bureaucracy within an organization. So if an employee comes to you with a concern, not necessarily that they have to write it down, but they could tell you, the employer, manager, supervisor, whatever, and then you write it down, that, you know, listen to them, document it afterward, tell them you'll be on top of it, you know, let's, if it keeps happening, come back to me, let me know, that kind of stuff. So, and I've seen policies too, where basically it says that the employee can come to them, I've drafted some of these where employees come to the bosses and the boss themselves, the supervisor, manager, officer, writes down the complaint, documents it.
Right, it's got to be, you know, management writing stuff down and having accurate records.
Yeah, so you don't want to, you don't want to bureaucratize it so much that basically you're creating a sort of informal gate that so people can't vent, they can't come to you with these things because it's just too difficult.
Right, and of course it's also management's, if you're writing these things down, do you ever have to, like, have the employees see it, per se, to make sure they're writing it down accurately?
You could, but no, it's not required.
It's not required.
It's interesting you say that because I've often conduct investigations related to employment disputes and issues, and I'll sit there with a notepad writing notes down, and sometimes I'll ask the employee across from me or the person who I'm interviewing, supervisor, whatever, would you like to look at my notes? Would you like to see what I'm writing? More often than not, they'll say no. I'll just do that just to, for transparency. You know, I'm walking the walk, just not talking the talk.
Okay. Now, but then the flip side of all this is what are the best things companies can do, Chuck, to make sure a lawsuit never, ever happens?
Well, you can't ever say never, ever, but basically, again, you're talking, I think, again, the transparency, the venting process, and you're also talking about employee recognition. And, you know, I'm putting my consulting hat on now, basically saying recognize good efforts, good work, good performance, behavior by your employees. And when I say behavior, I'm talking about, you know, attendance, coming to work on time, that kind of stuff. Helping other employees out, or maybe efforts within the community, that it's good PR for a company if their employees are recognized as being out in the community doing outreach, social service type work, whatever, charitable work. So I think that type of, not just looking at the downside of employment disputes and trying to keep a lid on all the issues, but recognize, you know, on the same, the balance, create a balance with also all the good things that are going on in the workplace, all the good things your employees are doing.
Right. And a lot of that stuff relates to, you know, having a culture of the business, relates to having a productive work environment, an open work environment where people feel free to talk to, not just vent with their coworkers, but they will talk to higher-ups about their concerns, where people know that they're not going to get penalized or disciplined if they bring things to the attention of higher up people or getting into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be that kind of environment within a company that's kind of a free flowing environment, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it also you also, as management, have to exercise good judgment in terms of what you take action on too, so that every issue the employer or every issue your employees bring to you, you don't necessarily have to take the same level of action. You don't have to give it the same depth of action. So, I mean, if you think it's gossip and innuendo and that's it, fine, you pay attention to it, move on. But if it's something serious such as harassment, discrimination, violence, drug usage, whatever, then you do something about it. Don't wait until something really bad happens.
Chuck, where does the employee handbook come into in the play in the business?
Employee handbook is a key aspect of, well, of the business, of running the business. It basically helps to create the culture that you're talking about. It basically states what your ideology is towards running the business, towards your employees, your human resources, practices, policies, and all that. It's your statement of what we're about as a company, how we're going to treat you as an employee, how we're going to keep you working for us, how we select our employees, that kind of stuff.
Well, does that then become a legal document, Chuck?
It could, yes. It could be considered a contractual agreement, too, depending on the language you use and how you use it, how you use the handbook.
So if I were to own a business and I wrote my own little handbook, mm-hmm. Would it be wise for me to have it reviewed by an employment attorney? Or
it would be wise maybe even to have it written by an employment attorney. You know, not just written by yourself, but have it written by an employment attorney. You basically tell them what you're looking for, what you're trying to do, and have that attorney create it for you along with you. And basically, it's almost like writing a job description to an extent. I mean, there is an analytical process involved with it that you want to be able to adhere to so that you're creating a document that integrates seamlessly with your strategy for the company, your strategic plan if you have it, what your vision is for the company itself. If it stands apart, if it appears to stand apart, you're just doing a disservice to yourself and your employees.
So when I hire somebody, you think I should have somebody or myself sit down and go through the handbook with the person? Or should I just give them the handbook and say, read it?
You could require them, you could just say, read it, and then come to me and we'll talk about it afterwards, or go to your supervisor and talk about it, have them sign off on it, that they've read it and reviewed it, and see if they have questions or submit questions in writing. But if you have the time to discuss it with them and explain it to them, by all means take that time, because then you can document that you have discussed it with them and read it with them and all. But if you're talking about a larger company, it may not be feasible to do that. It could be it just could be not an efficient use of time.
Well, in the concept we use at the Rogers Group, employees are either profitable to employ or they're unprofitable to mm-hmm. have around.
Yeah.
How would I go about ridding myself? Let's presume I didn't follow the process, and let's presume I hired the wrong employee. Mm-hmm. And let's presume they've been on board now for 6 months and they're just not working out.
Mm-hmm.
What actions can I take legally to get rid of this person in the most exponential manner?
Well, if you're in an employment at will state, that is a state where basically you can terminate an employee at any time for any reason with or without notice, and likewise the employee can quit employment in the same way, then you could just cut the cord immediately if you'd like. You may get hit with unemployment comp, which will cost you money, but if you're willing to absorb that cost, fine. Now, if you have some sort of collective bargaining agreement or something that mitigates the concept of employment at will, such as maybe a right to work state, some of these laws in right to work states, or an employment handbook which creates a contract between you and the employee, then you may be there may be more restrictions placed on what you can do. But then you're talking about basically documenting, maybe going through more of an investigative process in terms of what the issues are relative to performance or behavior, those types of, and covering yourself on those types of issues. And also, you basically want to do the same thing if you don't want to pay the unemployment comp. So if you're trying to avoid unemployment comp and insulate yourself from that, you also want to document and basically make sure that your process is going to be viable before the Department of Employment Security, Unemployment Comp Board, whatever is applicable in that state.
Well, you know, in general, and I know it differs from state to state, but mm-hmm. most employers don't know how to avoid unemployment comp.
Yeah.
What actually triggers that in terms of them having to pay or them not having to pay?
Well, I always start out with the concept that, you know, and do you really want a third party running your business? Do you really want the government telling you how to treat your employees, how to operate? And that's basically what happens is that when an employer goes up against these bureaucrats, you're basically talking about how we run our business and what we do. And what I try to do is, when I work with clients, is get objective. Don't take this personally. Think in terms of running your, you know, the employee is an asset. Like you said, it's profitable or not profitable. It's just like any capital asset within a company. And, you know, maybe this sounds dehumanizing, but approach it from that perspective when you're dealing with the government or any sort of regulatory agency that could potentially cost you money. Document. Make sure you're consistent in the way you document and how you approach this employee or employees. And basically then you make the best case possible to the Department of Employment Security. You could even bring an attorney with you or have an attorney create the case or respond to the complaint for you. Some companies do that. There are third-party companies which also handle unemployment comp. You just have to be careful, though. Just like in the way you select an employee, you have to be careful in how you select an attorney or some other third-party professional in terms of how they handle your business for you.
So a lot of these companies just think that the only way they can get out of not paying unemployment comp is if the employee quits. But you're saying actually, Chuck, we are heading to break time.
Okay.
Once again. So we will come back right on this.
Okay.
This is Dr. Tom Rogers, along with Jim Bellis and Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. We are with the Rogers Group. Feel free to visit us on our website at drtomrogers.com or send us an email at tom@drtomrogers.com. And Rogers is spelled R-O-G-E-R-F. Or give us a call at 847-562-9766. That's 847-562-9766. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Manifest your personal and professional dream by honoring your true genius and magnificence. Tune in to D Martini, Live and Inspired, every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific. Your host, Dr. John F. D. Martini, shares his enlightening perspectives, humorous observations of human nature, and practical action steps to live a truly inspired, purposeful, and fulfilling life. Touching on 7 key areas of life, spiritual, mental, vocational, familial, social, financial, and physical, Dr. D. Martini mingles entertaining stories with transformational wisdom and insights. So tune in to D. Martini, Live and Inspired, every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Business.
Technology is only as good as its execution. On CIO Talk Radio, host Sung Jo Gal will interview CIOs, CTOs, and other decision makers about their insights in dealing with technology. Learn directly from these subject matter experts on how to get the best returns out of your investment in IT. Know ahead of time what problems and challenges you face in executing IT strategies in the real world. If you are a technology manager, consultant, or advisor, you cannot afford to miss out on what today's technology thought leaders have to say about today's most urgent IT issues. Listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sung Jo Gal every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of the global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do's when faced with change. Embrace the new reality, adopt transition into your personal power portfolio, and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We are back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 1-866-233-7861. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Bellis.
This is Dr. Tom Rogers, along with my colleague Jim Bellis for Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. We've had Chuck Krugel on, and Chuck has an employment labor attorney and HR human resources consultant, and Chuck has been telling us, really emphasizing the importance of transparency within companies and having things laid out, you know, on paper that they can show to any federal government agency that they're doing the right things with people. And Chuck, well, first of all, Chuck, how will people get a hold of you?
Sure. I could be reached in Chicago at 312-804-3851 or via my website at http://charlesakrugel.blogspot.com or via email at charlesakrugel@gmail.com.
Okay. So they get just www.charlesakrugel.blogspot.com. Would that work?
Yeah, or you go on Google and you just type in, even in quotation marks, Chuck Krugel, K-R-U-G-E-L, and on my website and all that will come up, Chuck Charles Krugel or Charles A. Krugel.
Right. Now, Chuck, we were talking about unemployment compensation when the break hit, and what you had, one thing I want you to, there were a couple things to focus on as you get back to that is it always the case that if an employee quits, the company never has to pay unemployment insurance, and can these there be situations where an employee is fired that the company would not have to pay unemployment insurance? And just talk about all that stuff.
Sure. There are situations where if an employee quits, the company would still have to pay. And the basic concept or the idea is called constructive discharge, where basically the employer forces the employee to quit by creating an environment, what you call a hostile environment, or just general, the workplace is just so overbearing, or the managers are so overbearing on the employee relative to conduct or something that they're just being egregiously unfair to that employee and they force them to quit. And therefore, it's not a voluntary quit, so unemployment comp can be awarded on the basis of that. Generally speaking, with unemployment comp, it happens more often with illegal conduct by the employer, such as illegal harassment or discrimination. So they force a woman to quit because they're just discriminating on the basis of gender, or they force a minority to quit because they're discriminating on the basis of race or national origin. So in that case, yeah, they would pay. Now, in terms of firing somebody, do you always have to pay unemployment comp? And the answer is no, because you're allowed to fire somebody for misconduct, for if you really try to rehabilitate them performance-wise and exhaust all remedies and really take exhaustive means to try to rehabilitate that person or employee performance-wise, it's possible that you may not have to pay. I've only seen it a couple of times. Generally, performance, it's very difficult to get by on that argument alone and ignore conduct such as behavior or attendance issues. Attendance issues are always one where you could fire somebody and if you follow your policies and practices consistently and you're able to prove that to the Department of Employment Security or the unemployment comp people, then you would not, it's possible you wouldn't have to pay.
Well, what about if, like, a company caught an employee stealing?
Yeah.
I mean, a big amount, you know, $50,000, $70,000,
$100,000. Even less?
Or
yes.
More.
Or even less, actually. So, no, you wouldn't have to pay as long as you can sufficiently prove, you know, you have to prove as a matter of fact, but if you have a good faith basis for believing they did it and you fired them for that reason, you probably will not have to pay. Now, if the employee comes back and shows that it was an accounting error by somebody else or not them, or it was just accounting error by them, and the employer refused to listen to me, they just decided to get rid of me, and that was that, they always had an in for me, it's possible you may not win that one. And I've seen cases, and you have to remember, too, you're dealing with the government, and I've seen cases where I've handled them, and you send everything, photos and all this stuff, that shows explicitly misconduct, and the employment people make, you know, at the bureau, they make a mistake and they award. And I've had to handle it where it's taken hours, you know, even on a Friday once I did this where it took 3 or 4 hours to get the decision reversed. I was so irate, I was shouting at somebody downtown about the decision to grant unemployment comp, and they got it reversed within a few hours. So they make mistakes. They're people, too, and sometimes you have to be cognizant of that, too, as an employer, that you are dealing with people, and it's not an infallible process.
Chuck, we're almost coming to the end of the interview. What kind of advice would you just generally give people in dealing with this whole legal aspects of employment?
Yeah, don't take action on the basis of any of the protected classes or on the basis of a protected activity such as union organizing or some sort of concerted action. Take action on the basis of performance and inappropriate behavior or conduct. Select carefully. Use diagnostic selection techniques or tools if you feel that's going to help you the most, but use them in conjunction with professionals such as you guys or, you know, people who are recognized as being test administrators and interpreters of the results. Also, going by your gut is a good thing, but you know, just make sure you're taking action on the basis of objective criteria such as performance and conduct behavior. Don't focus on noise, such as race, sex, national origin, age, disability, military status, any of the protected classes.
Well, go ahead, yeah.
Well, what's the most outrageous thing that you've been involved with?
I think the most outrageous thing, and I was actually thinking about that earlier, too, is, I mean, there's been a number of them, and I used to work for a huge public school system was my first job, and dealing with sexual misconduct among employees towards children, or another employer worked for once, a crack pipe was discovered, a homemade crack pipe was discovered in a child area of the workplace, and you know, I had to investigate that and find out who did it. Fortunately, it wasn't an employee, it was a third-party security guard who left that there, but you know, you investigate these matters and you try to find out how it all started and why, you know, how can a child be the one who discovers this, and you know, and it's just unbelievable to see, you know, I always say that no matter what you can imagine in terms of the worst behavior or conduct that some person can do, and it doesn't matter if you're management or an employee, if they think they can get away with it, they'll try to do it in the workplace. Mm. And just, I don't know, is human nature or what?
Yeah, the advice we always give people is always attack the process or the issue, and don't attack people personally, because it gets you so subjective and so worked up, you sometimes miss what you're really trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I don't discuss morality in the workplace. You're talking about earning money, profit, and you get into the issues. Yeah, you're right. Just deal with the issue, deal with the person. I've had to fire child sex abusers before, and you know, I just look at them as, you know, some people may not like to hear this, but I would look at them as any other employee and say, you know, we got to get rid of you because you did this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Chuck, let me just kind of summarize what we've gone through today, and you tell me how close I am.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we started talking about is what you can say or not say when you're asked to give a reference on a prior employee.
Yeah.
And then we went into some union activities. And just to make it clear, we're not against unions. What we're against is fighting with the unions.
Mm-hmm.
So the objective here is to, if you are involved with a union, is to make sure you get along with them, and that work is opposite. And then the other thing we talked about, or Chuck talked about, was things to do and not to do. We talked about an employee handbook, a union comp, and what can get you into it or not get you into it. And then, of course, take the actions based on conduct and not emotional issues with a lot of noise. So how did that sound, Chuck?
It sounded good. And I would also just like to add one other thought real briefly, that I always hear about employers and clients always say to me, you know, I have a really difficult employee and they're going ballistic and nuts and all that. And I also look at then what is going on at the workplace that creates this circumstance where an employee is going nuts or ballistic or has all these problems. I try to find out what the employer is doing, because, you know, I've fired a lot of people in my career, hundreds, and I've never had anybody threaten or come after me, and I always try to, I figure out that.
Gotcha.
Or I figure
well,
that.
Well, thanks, Jack. We're going to have to move on here. So, Tom, can you tell us all about next week's show?
Yeah, next week's show we're having Rick Pangrazio. He's the president of the Human Resource Store. Now, Rick is really a person that's committed for the continuous development of employees and the related processes that make it possible to develop employees. And that was formed actually through many invaluable experiences he's had working alongside some of the best and worst of executives. Rick believes that human capital is our most important yet often most neglected asset that a company can have. And applying this human capital and technology toward the improvement of a business has always been what Rick is really about. So as the owner of the Human Resource Store and someone who's dedicated to creating opportunities for others, Rick takes what he's learned to develop people to achieve their goals in concert with the overall organizational goals, and consequently enhance both the quality of their lives and the profitability of the organization. If you really want to develop, bottom line is, you really want to develop your people, this is one guy you want to listen to. It's going to be a great interview.
Tom, how people get hold of us if they like to?
Right. Well, the number of the Rogers Group, as I said before, is 847-562-9766. That's 562-9766, 847 area code. Our email address is tom@drtomrogers.com. And that's Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S, for tom@drtomrogers.com, or our website at drtomrogers.com.
Well, it's time for us to go now. This is Jim Velas along with Dr. Tom Rogers. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, Thursday afternoon, 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, or sometime in between for those of you living in Mid-America. Thanks for listening. Everybody have a great week. Bye-bye.
We thank you for joining us today. Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Bellis will be back again next week at the same time with more business diseases. Cure them or die, right here on Voice America Business.